Hello, America. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and we are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and today we have a wonderful show. We have a private interview with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and we are sitting in his office, and welcome, Yuri. It's very nice to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Also, always a pleasure to be here.
Good. So, you were on our show a couple of weeks ago, and I know that the feedback that we got from people about that particular show was that they were very interested in your background. For the new listeners, Dr. Yuri Maltsev is a professor of economics. He is a former economic advisor to the Gorbachev regime at the end of the 1980s in Russia. And he defected from the Soviet Union in 1989, and ever since then has been an incredible voice of liberty and free markets and free people. And I would like to start off, Yuri, by asking you, what is your general view of the American economy and the world economy at this time?
Well, our economy is experiencing a lot of problems, as you know. And most of these problems were created by excessive government intervention, by poor policies, by government distorting markets, and the more we distort markets there, the more problems we'll have. That happened almost everywhere. The government pursuing this, say, ideological policy that too big to fail, it's imposing its will on us that it's not a consumer anymore in the driving seat of our economy, but the government bureaucrats, they are in the driving seat of our economy today, and that's why we will see more of the same. We will see high unemployment. I think that we'll have higher unemployment than today. I think that already in November it probably would pass the 10% mark. According to official statistics. However, this official statistics also is not trustworthy. It's turning more and more into Soviet type of statistics where it is manipulated, politically manipulated by government bureaucrats.
Let me interrupt you on that particular point. I often refer the listeners to a website called shadowstats.com, and they can actually get the most current actual statistics that are non-manipulated based on the methodologies that were used before these statistical measurements like labor statistics and inflation were politicized over the last 40 years and compromised. And according to them, we actually have nationwide today over 21% unemployment. And that's when you take into account all the workforce. Mm-hmm. So that your comment about it being more resembling Soviet statistics is quite a chilling comment.
Yes, and speaking about Soviet Union, that was probably too big to fail, but it failed miserably. It was a country of 11 time zones with 6% of all surface of this planet. And it failed miserably because of the government, which destroyed the economy, which destroyed human spirit, which destroyed character of the people. So so we can see that these changes are taking place here in the United States. And I think that maybe it's because Soviet Union collapsed, so we don't see this awful example of full-blown socialism anymore before our eyes, and we're embracing the same old ideas, the same old non-working schemes and models for our economic development. And so what comes to me, to my mind, is that the only lesson of history is that it does not teach us anything.
Right. Well, we're going to be back right after the break, folks. Please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. I am your host, Michael McKay, and we are speaking with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and we'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us. And we're back. Thank you very much, folks. This is Michael McKay, and you're listening to Radio Free Market. And I am here today with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and we've been talking about his general view of the economy as it is. And You brought up, Yuri, the lessons that your Soviet experience taught you when you were in Russia, and you were an economic advisor. At one point, you were a people's deputy for Moscow from 1987-88, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And
89.
And 89. And there are, actually, we've had a show with Dr. Art Carden on the myths of capitalism's history. And I think that rather than myths of socialism's and communism's history, what we really have is untold stories. You know, there are many untold stories of what really has happened in the Soviet Union and in other places, too. And so you were talking about the manipulation of statistics that happened in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one story that you mentioned was about the GDP of the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
And how that was totally miscalculated by the United States, even. And so, in any case, please tell us that story. That's a very interesting story there about the GDP of the Soviet Union.
Very good. Yes. Well, I would say that there are plenty of myths about socialism, about capitalism. We still have people who are fabricating these myths, and definitely Michael Moore comes to mind, who would be a great propaganda person for Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
I think, besides, it was amazing that this person is lying through his teeth. I mean,
mm-hmm.
There's no healthcare system in Cuba. There's capitalism does not result in misery. It produced the highest ever seen in human history standard of living. And sure enough, Soviet Union, they've tried to manipulate statistics. The statistics in most communist countries and in today's Cuba, in today's North Korea, it is just a branch of propaganda. It's a numerical propaganda, as they would call it.
Mm-hmm.
Numerical propaganda. And all these numbers were fake. The problem with numerical propaganda is that we have a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., especially agencies like Central Intelligence Agency. They have a special Office of Foreign Economic Assessment, who is studying these numbers, and in most cases they believe this propaganda.
Yeah.
To the point
they actually don't even challenge it, they just use their numbers.
That's right. They in most cases they use their numbers. Sometimes they would think that they're doing even better than they say. And that was the case with Soviet Union. And in 1988, 1989, CIA, when Soviet Union was literally falling apart, CIA came up with a ridiculous number that Soviet economy is about 65% of the U.S. economy. That Soviet gross domestic product is 65% of the U.S. domestic product. 65% at that time per person was the economy of Canada. And if you will fly to Canada, you will see what Canada looks like, and you fly from Canada to Soviet Union, and you wouldn't find anything resembling standard of living and wealth that you can observe in our northern neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Why in Canada is 65% of U.S.? Because they have more socialism. So that's why they're about one-third poorer than we are.
Mm-hmm.
However, they looked like a great superpower in comparison with the streets of Moscow, in comparison with the Soviet Union. And so I had plenty of time when I was in Moscow because I was one of advisors to the government, but they didn't listen to my advice much. Well, actually, look what happened. But I did some work recalculating Soviet economic statistics. And now I understand that my numbers probably are not very scientific as well, but I came up with the idea that Soviet gross domestic product is about 3-4% of the United States.
3-4%?
3-4% of the United States. Was a country which was producing a lot of military hardware, also of pretty low quality, but they couldn't turn out almost anything else. It's
a subsistence level kind of economy.
That's right. And not many people realize that in Soviet Union at that time, the country which was sending people to space, which had a huge stockpiles of nuclear weapons, that in that very country, life expectancy was 57 for men, 66 for women.
Mm.
that in that country, 36% of hospitals, mostly in rural areas, would not have running water or sewer system. Can you imagine you have a surgery and
36%
of hospitals did not have running water or sewer system. Mm-hmm. In the middle of surgeries, a nurse would run to the well and bring water, and they would try to boil it to make it usable and whatnot. There was no such a thing as disposable tools or whatever in the hospital. So all needles, all syringes, everything was reused many times to the point that sometimes you could see rust on this needle.
And of course, spread disease.
Exactly. 78%, according to the statistics of the late Soviet Union, 78% of HIV positive people in the USSR got the virus from the tainted blood and dirty needles in the state-run hospitals. So that's
78%.
I don't know how correct this number is, again, but from another hand, this was free healthcare for all. Mm-hmm. So you go to the hospital, they give you AIDS, and they wouldn't charge you anything.
They got what they paid for.
That's right. So that was it was the same mass irresponsibility in healthcare system as it was everywhere else. They pretend they're paying us, we pretend we're working for them. Mm-hmm. And in vital industries like healthcare, or I would say nuclear weapons, that can be detrimental for all of us. Can you imagine? Yes, that can lead to epidemics, that can lead to nuclear accidents. If you remember Chernobyl.
Sure.
On the 26th of April, 1986, a bunch of engineers in Chernobyl were drunk to the point that they were thinking, what will happen if we'll turn this gadget to the right? And they did, and it blew up. And so it was a human error of immense proportions led to catastrophic consequences, which are felt even today. Mm-hmm. So that's how I think we should deal with socialism. So I came up with the idea of 3 to 4%. And definitely when I defected to the United States, I was debriefed by all kind of governments of United States, of United Kingdom, of Germany. And at that time, Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense, and he was very interested in that statistics. And he said, well, I would presume, he said, that if CIA believes it's 65%, you think it's only 3 to 4%, then the truth is somewhere in between. And at that time I said, yes, Mr. Secretary, it's in between 3 and 4%. and it was an interesting reaction from him. he said, sweet.
Somehow it's hard to imagine Dick Cheney saying sweet.
well, at that time, yes, he was Secretary of Defense.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm sure there are so many other stories of what actually happened. I'm aware that one of the stories that most Americans are not aware of is the horror that actually occurred in Ukraine in the winter of 1932-33. I hate to admit this, but I was not even aware of that until fairly recently. That the people of the Ukraine, 7 million of them, were systematically starved to death by Stalin.
Yes.
And can you tell us more about that?
Yes, that's what Ukrainians, they call it Holodomor. Holodomor, that means death by starvation. Mm-hmm. And Holodomor was engineered by Stalin and his cronies, including people like Khrushchev, including people like Beria, Voroshilov and Kaganovich. They engineered this starvation because Ukrainians were proud farmers, some of them successful farmers.
Isn't it the breadbasket of Europe?
It was a breadbasket of Europe.
Yeah.
Now you're from Iowa, now probably Iowa is a breadbasket for Ukraine because agriculture was completely destroyed by collectivization and still is recovering very slowly in this part of the world. Can imagine in 1913, Russia and Ukraine They were exporting more grain than United States.
Wow.
Than United States. Today, it's a recipient of grain coming from somewhere else. Somewhere else. In Ukraine, when I was a kid, and in 1960s in Ukraine, which has 20% of the world black dirt, the most fertile kind of soil, that's almost everything grows there in a fantastic and very productive way. In that country, in Ukraine, I observed myself, I was standing there in a very long bread lines. Can you imagine the country which was a breadbasket for Europe? They can have bread for themselves even under Khrushchev. But returning back to 1932-1933, at that time, Ukrainian peasants were not excited about collectivization. That means the government seizure of their land, turning them into slaves. And so they didn't, they opposed this, and Stalin decided to starve them to death. It was starvation. Children would die. Children and older people would die first, usually. There were cases of cannibalism. And that was all depicted in a wonderful video, which right now is available on the internet for free, or you can buy it over there, the DVD. It's called The Soviet Story.
So we're going to come back right after the break, and we're going to talk more about this this video, Soviet Story. Stay with us, folks. This is Radio Free Market. We'll be back right after the break. Thank you for listening. And we're back. Folks, this is Radio Free Market. This is Michael McKay, and I am speaking today with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and we've been talking about the lessons of history that most Americans, indeed most people around the world, are not aware of, and we are focusing on the story of the Ukraine in 1932-1933, when Stalin mass-starved 7 million people. And so we were interrupted by the break. Yuri, can you pick that up again, please?
Yes, and this mass starvation was engineered by Stalin and his cronies to actually repress any kind of resistance towards his economic plans.
What were his economic plans?
To have a collectivized agriculture, to turn agriculture into a huge labor camp. For peasants, because his plans to take over the whole world with his military might, somebody was supposed to pay for this. Mm-hmm. And so he picked up peasantry to do that. In Russia, in 1913, were 160 million peasants lived in Russia. And peasantry was the most productive and I would say extremely religious. Religious group of a very conservative group of Russian people, the backbone of Russian society, economy, and Russian army even. And liquidation, the murder of Russian peasantry, I think it is one of the gravest crimes communism ever committed. Mm. And they destroyed peasants, they destroyed agriculture, the forced labor was imposed on the whole country, but in an especially ferocious way onto peasantry. All independent peasants, especially those who were successful peasants, were called kulaks, or fists. And they and their families would be sent to Siberia and perish there. On the top of 7 million peasants who were starved in Ukraine, 10 million peasants were expunged into Siberia. Mm-hmm. Most of them died either on the way or would be dumped from this cattle cars in the middle of Siberian winter and perish just immediately upon arrival. They were sent there with their children, with their families. There's a wonderful new book very scary book by Alexander Yakovlev. Alexander Yakovlev, he was the confidant of Gorbachev. He was, I think, the true father of perestroika, because he persuaded Gorbachev to undertake some reforms, which he did. And Yakovlev came up with a book called Infanticide in the Soviet Union.
Infanticide in the Soviet Union.
Okay. As a murder of children in the Soviet Union by Stalin's regime, because Stalin thought that the apple doesn't go far from the apple tree, and if he would kill a father, then probably a wife and children would not like him. And so his point was to get rid of all of them, mm-hmm. altogether.
So were those peasants that he was eliminating, did he just evaluate that they would not be productive for his war machine?
No, he didn't. He wasn't thinking about productivity at all. He was thinking how to stay in power. Mm-hmm. So he would think that successful people, whether peasants or even not peasants, if you're a successful engineer or a very good productive worker, then you would be the first to oppose the regime, and so he was trying to get rid of the most eminent people, people who are overachievers. They went first.
And so then, anybody who might prove to be in opposition to him.
Yes, because he thought that these people would be the ones who would oppose the regime. And he wanted to turn the whole country into kind of timid, loyal people.
I see.
And what he did is he created a regime of the mass terror, and this terror was, I would say, nobody could escape it. If you are, say, not a Jewish person in Nazi Germany, you would think you are out of danger. In Soviet Union, whether you're Russian or Jewish, Ukrainian, communist or anti-communist, if you like Stalin or you hate Stalin, you had the same chances to be liquidated, to be shot, to be put to death by this perfect killer state which socialism produces. And it produces it inevitably. And some people think that, well, in the United States we can have kind of a light version. Whatever, yes, we have a light version, we will not have maybe mass murder, but inevitably at a certain point it evolves into this. There were 34 countries, communist countries, in the world, and all of them ended up with the abuses of their population, with the complete denial of any human and civil rights. The first thing, civil liberties would go out of the window, and that's what we can think also of. That can imagine if we have, for example, now many people are so excited about socialized healthcare, so we'll have a free healthcare for all. But you can look at the same thing from another point of view. That means that it will be a bureaucrat who would be in charge of your health. A bureaucrat would make decisions, life and death decisions for you. So this is what we all the time should keep in mind.
Right. Now, we're going to be coming up with a break in a few seconds, but you had mentioned at the close of the last segment a video that people can watch. It's Soviet Story.
Soviet Story, yes. Soviet Story, you can, I think, buy this video on SovietStory.com or you can watch it on the internet, I think, on YouTube and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's made in Latvia. It is one of the best, I think, the best movies.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Soviet Story movie. Folks, Yuri mentioned this movie to me a few months ago, and it's quite a compelling piece. So stay with us. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay. We'll be back right after the break. Thank you. And we're back. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. Thank you for staying with us, folks. We have the great pleasure this afternoon of having Dr. Yuri Maltsev with us, and we've been talking about the lessons of history that most Americans are not aware of that are the result of communism and socialism around the world. We were just talking about Ukraine in the last segment, and Yuri mentioned this movie, Soviet Story, and we have now twice gotten started talking about that. Let's talk about that movie a little bit.
Yes, this movie was produced in independent Latvia by a young producer, very gifted gentleman. His name is Edvins Šnore. And Mr. Šnore, he created a video which was a revelation even for me. I am kind of specializing, my research interests are in that part of the world. But I learned for myself a lot of chilling, I would say, facts, which were not available because KGB archives were closed.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of revealing stories about Karl Marx was his own writings of 1849. Karl Marx was at that time editor of newspaper called Neue Rheinische Zeitung, New Rhine newspaper, and he was writing editorials for that. And these editorials were classified in all communist countries, because he was referring to many people of Europe as racial trash.
Uh-huh.
He was saying that people like Basques, like Scottish Islanders, like Poles, like Serbs, were racial trash because they were so backward from his point of view that they would never understand the ideas of socialism. And so they should be discarded.
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 And so that was his original position. His original position was that implementation of communism was going to require the discarding of the various racial trash that
racial.
He had evaluated.
Yes, and then he referred to as social trash to people who are wealthy.
And this movie, A Soviet Story, picks up how that became a popular idea.
That's right, that's right. And how they killed so many people. And they did. In another editorial, same Marx, the title is self-descriptive, The Absurdity of Poland. Absurdity of Poland.
So what did want to do with Poland?
Yes, discard it.
Just discard it.
Discard it. I think that what he meant is to kill people, because his follower, Lenin, he called politics as a form of pest control.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that we should kill all people who are not with us. That will be the last killing in human history, because out of this necessary killing, out of necessary self-cleansing, a new race would emerge of this selfless, wonderful, compassionate people.
Out of all the murder.
Out of all this murder. And amazingly now that in the movie, they show even symbols, say, of Nazi regime,
yeah,
and Soviet regime, and the symbols are more or less the same.
Yes.
The same people with the same expressions on their faces. So we are talking about, but many people probably are confused by talking about communism and socialism and national socialism. These are all forms of the same. The idea is that the government is the head of everything, that the government is ruled by these people with great vision who can see and judge much better than others. Mm-hmm. And so this is the essential idea of socialism. Why many intellectuals are so fond of socialism? Because it gives them the power.
Right.
Them the power, because they are the most educated, so they know who should live and who should be discarded.
And there were a lot of intellectuals in surprising numbers that were calling for the elimination of people.
Absolutely. In the same very movie, they have an interview with George Bernard Shaw.
So George Bernard Shaw was actually suggesting to people that,
yes,
you know, that there should be exterminations of others.
That's right. George Bernard Shaw, very famous British playwright, and a socialist, and there's an interview, a documentary interview with him, and he is saying, well, you probably, like myself, know about people who would have difficulties in justifying their existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I pray that scientists should come up with some gas.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can put these people humanely to sleep.
It's just chilling to hear.
It is chilling. And sure enough, this gas was invented.
Mm-hmm.
And they were putting people, the socialists of another kind, national socialists in Germany, mm-hmm, were putting Jews, putting Soviet POWs, putting gypsies, putting classical liberals, Freemasons, would go to the gas chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to just make a footnote on this comment about this movie, Soviet Story, folks. I think it's extremely important that you try to watch it, and brace yourself, because it's hard to believe that there could be such cruelty in the world. But the important lesson that this brings to us is that, as you said, this is where collectivism leads.
Mm-hmm.
Because collectivism necessarily erodes our choices.
Yes, yes.
And as a result, other people get put into position of creating mandates and restrictions. And yet, the advocates of socialism today, they still have this belief that it can be done humanely.
Yes, yes.
And is there any leg for them to stand on?
Well, my boss, Mr. Gorbachev, he believed in something he called socialism with human face. His idea was that was Stalin and Lenin who perverted the idea of socialism, and they made socialism unattractive to people because of this mass violence, mass murder. And his point was that we should clean socialism from this aberrations, create a wonderful new, very appealing image of socialism with no murders, mm-hmm. socialism based on compassion and love. And at that time, if I may, there was a funny joke going on in Russia when he was talking about the socialism, that a CIA agent was sent to Moscow, and he goes from one store to another, and there's a shortage of everything. He goes to grocery store, no groceries. He goes to bakery, no bread. And there is a KGB agent looking over his shoulder and what he's writing in his notebook. He said, 10 years ago, you would be shot for that. And he writes, no bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened with socialism, with the real world. Why this state, which was too big to fail, failed so miserably, because Gorbachev, inadvertently, he removed fear out of the system, which was glued together only by fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an unintended consequence of his action, and the whole thing fell like a card house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should be thankful to Mr. Gorbachev, but he definitely would be way more respected and cherished in the book of history if he would do it deliberately, if he would know what he is actually doing. But he was unfortunate. He was all the time trying to reform the system,
right.
Reform this cruel system, which should be discarded.
Which was being forced into the reform because it was basically broke.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Then communists are nice only when they're weak.
Mm-hmm.
When they're strong, there's no such luck.
You know, I want to jump back a couple of segments. You mentioned George Bernard Shaw and how he shockingly called for the extermination of people on a... In fact, I remember that part of the interview where he says, please, sir, sit down and justify to us your existence.
Yes.
I mean, it's just a bone-chilling mm-hmm. kind of thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But there were many Westerners and in the media that actually were quite... complicit in helping Soviets or communism's advance.
Mm-hmm.
Back in Ukraine, there was Mr. Durante.
Yes, Walter Durante. He was a New York Times correspondent. He went to Ukraine in the middle of this man-made disaster, in the middle of
7 million people
of
being
seven of this genocide, awful genocide of Ukrainians. And he was writing in New York Times that he never saw plumpier babies than he saw in Ukraine. He was deliberately lying. He got Pulitzer Prize for his lies. And the government of Free Ukraine and the governments of Baltic states and Poland, they demanded that Pulitzer Committee should revoke this, admit that the decision was wrong to give him Pulitzer Prize,
right.
And they didn't.
Right.
And they didn't. So the same Durantes, they were praising, or Fidel Castro at a certain point, who also today is no buts and ifs about it, is one of the mass serial killers of this planet.
Yeah, let's talk about Cuba. You know, you mentioned that it has not been accurately presented.
Yes, I've been to Cuba many times because for me it's interesting to see kind of this communism and it's what it would degenerate into.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the most corrupt societies on this planet. It's a society when you have gray masses who are literally undernourished. You can see people who are literally starving in Cuba. Average wage in Cuba is $9 per month.
$9
per month, 30 pesos. $9 per month. There was a rampant prostitution there, black market, all kind of, all human relations are all perverted. And that's a beautiful, it is a beautiful, proud, musical, very gifted, artistically people who were reduced by the Castro regime to that slaves. And this is also the country is so run down that you see this people walking themselves with donkeys on all highways, no cars. I never saw an ambulance in Cuba. Many people were interested in what kind of health care. I'm bringing my students there to see this failure of socialism. And so they were asking about it, indoctrinated in the United States via media that Cuba has, for some reason, good healthcare system. It doesn't. There is no healthcare in Cuba. If you go to a Cuban pharmacy, you can only buy pictures of Fidel and Che Guevara. And that's what they treat them with. Hospitals, no hospitals. No. So it is, they register their babies. After half a year, they've been born, and then they fool the whole world, or at least the liberal press, that in Cuba, infant mortality rate is very low. Yes, very low, because they don't register people who die, and that's why it is low. So this is a man-made catastrophe of immense proportions.
Yeah, I know a lot of our listeners that are of Cuban descent are going to applaud hearing this because they've been fighting the propaganda that has been promulgated.
Absolutely, and the Cuban community in the United States is so viciously attacked by liberals, and it's just mind-boggling how people can distort history, distort facts to their private benefit.
You know, I have an interesting question. How did you survive? How did and even excel in the Soviet Union? How did you do that?
Well, that was a pretty oppressive society, definitely. And however, I kind of was following the slogans of Taoism. One of them is lay low, don't be seen in the grass. Mm-hmm. And so I was pursuing my own goals. I was reading what I wanted to read. I changed my major in the Moscow State University so I could read the free market books.
Well, some of those were from the 1800s.
That's right, from the 1800s. I mean, that's right.
We were
and they were prohibited.
Ago,
yes.
William Graham Sumner's book, you know, on the history of American currency, which was written in 1874. And you had read this book.
Absolutely.
And you made the comment to me that it was one that kind of slipped through the cracks.
Sure. And I was acquainted back in the, because officially my major was critique of the bourgeois vulgar political economy. So to criticize something like this, then you need to have an access to this.
So you had special access.
Yes. So in the Lenin's library in Moscow, it's like the size of Library of Congress, they had this secret floor, number 11, where they have this, they had this at that time, the special library of prohibited books. Uh-huh. And so if you have an access there, so you can go there, you will sign a pledge, it will never tell anybody what you read, and then you can read there Eugen Bimbaverk, for example, uh-huh. or Karl Menger, or Friedrich von Hayek,
really?
And so that was reading that. However, they would put almost everything published in the West. Even Keynesian works were all there as prohibited, because the whole idea why they called vulgar bourgeois political economy, because the idea was that people, economists before Karl Marx, were all good. People like Adam Smith or David Ricardo, they were cherished. That these people were developing economic science. But then came Karl Marx, and Karl Marx put already a big full stop on economic development, because he told the truth according to communists, socialists, in the last instance. And then everybody who would not be in compliance with this truth is a liar. So Keynes was as much liar as Hayek, because Marx already discovered the truth, But these people were ignoring this.
So we can quit.
This or that, right. And so everybody who came after Marx was considered to be vulgar and considered to be a preacher in the Church of Capitalist Oppression. That was, I remember a book about Keynes was had the title, A Preacher in the Church of Capitalist Oppression.
We're going to be coming up to the end of our segment in just a second, but before the end of the show, I want to bridge to some of the things that we're looking at right now that are causing us concern. And one of the things that are off most people's radar is this movement towards the unification of tax codes. And we only have literally about 30 seconds for you to start this. We'll pick this up in the next segment. But can you start?
Yes. Now we have a new movement towards the world government. And the major idea is that countries should not compete in providing businesses with better environment to work with. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that those who have lower taxes can be more appealing to, and so they should raise their taxes, so we'll have a uniform tax system for the whole world.
So we're going to come back right after the break, folks, and we're going to talk more about this with Yuri Maltsev. This is Michael McKay, Radio Free Market. Stay with us. And we're back. Hello, folks. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay. And we've been having a fascinating conversation with Dr. Yuri Maltsev on the lessons that communism has given us, and that most Americans and indeed most people in the world are barely aware of. We started at the end of this last segment talking about this trend for the unification of tax codes. Now, what is in the news a lot right now is whether or not the United States dollar is going to continue to be the reserve currency of the world. And I know there's a big push currently, even today, as we're meeting. There's large meetings going on, the G20 meeting, on the future of currency and what is going to be the role that the U.S. dollar is going to play, whether China or whether some basket of currencies is going to get created, and so on and so forth. But the overall trend seems to be the centralization of the money, and the more ominous indicator is this centralization of the rules. Because once you start centralizing rules, then you have to centralize control, you know, a controlling agency.
Absolutely.
And so, folks, we were talking, Yuri and I were talking before the show about this call recently by the Pope for a one world government with real teeth. And would you care to comment, not specifically on that, but on this trend of a greater central control?
I was just thinking about what you were saying, and and it, what comes to mind, it sounds maybe like conspiracy theory, however, it's rooted in Marxist writings. Mm-hmm. Marx believed that you can only have socialism not in one single country, but all over the world. Mm-hmm. That socialism can come only as a big world government, And definitely on the way to do that, you need to have a more or less uniform big governments in all countries of the world. Right. And some countries, they embrace freedom. Mm-hmm. And these countries, for example, Estonia or Switzerland or mm-hmm. or Singapore or Hong Kong or mm-hmm. Taiwan or many other countries, they have pretty low tax rates mm-hmm. because they believe that low taxes, and you have more freedom to keep what you earned, from point of view of freedom and economic efficiency as well. The lower taxes you have, usually there is a inverse relationship between tax rate and rates of economic growth. So the lower are the taxes, the more wealth is created, the more wealth is kept by people. And socialists all around the world hate this idea. They think that government should provide all the so-called services to people, and people should be controlled by the government.
But as Margaret Thatcher pointed out, eventually you run out of other people's money.
That's right. That's right. So because of that, what they resort to the printing press. So if they have taken all people's money, then they can still print more mm-hmm. and tax them again, because inflation is another and the most, I would say, oppressive way of taxation, of stealing from people.
Right.
And now there is a trend going on through United Nations, through European Union, through OECD, that we should have kind of the world uniform tax code, because some countries, they enjoy, as they would say, unfair tax advantages.
So, Yuri, what do we do next? What do you recommend for people to actually do next to protect themselves, to educate themselves?
Well, I believe that we should realize that it's right now a critical time we live in. And I think everybody should take charge of their lives, and everybody should keep in mind that we are not historians of decline. This decline will happen only if we'll not do anything.
Right.
I think it will
be. So, folks, thank you very much, Yuri. Folks, this is Radio Free Market. Visit us on the web at radiofreemarket.com. And this is Michael McKay, and I'm thanking you for your attention today. And visit us next week. Thank you very much.